Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 99 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and Sean Orford, who's typing away on his massive new ridiculous looking iPhone 6 Plus.
I've just discovered the zoom function. If you tap the screen with three fingers.
Uh-huh. Oh, nice.
Zooms right up and back
again. Can I do that on my old iPhone 5? I think
we're having fun here.
Oh no, I don't think you can. Yeah, they are good with the old accessibility stuff.
Yeah.
Apple. Even in their desktop stuff as well. I've got a pal in Newcastle, went to uni with his eyes of he's had quite a lot of trouble with them. He can't see very well at all. It's some kind of really rare condition he's got, and he swears by Apple stuff just because it's that good to accessibility-wise, and you can change the contrast that easily and tap and zoom in. And
they really... It is good.
But yeah, you're liking your new big phone, eh?
Yeah. It's because I use the phone for things like if I'm FaceTiming people and stuff like that, and I'm needing to send information and things, it's easier to get access to the keyboard on that.
Yeah, fair enough. So, too big for me. It's only size. Well, you were about the same height, but no, they are pretty sweet, aren't they?
I mean, we're both hunky.
Yeah, right, just the right size, yeah. 5'6".
We're normal.
Well, I did read something this week about short people live longer. The shorter you are, the longer live. Although you are you do tend to have more trouble with your heart if you're shorter.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah, it's something crazy. Like for every 2.5 inches you're taller than 5'6", then you're supposed to live so much longer or something like that.
Right. What, taller you are, the longer you live?
Yeah.
Oh, right. I read the opposite. The shorter you are, the longer you live.
No, there was something about if you were too short, you had heart issues.
Oh, right. Okay. Heart stuff, yeah.
We'll have to check that out.
Let's look it up. Let's check our facts first.
We're
talking about depression this week, or we will be shortly, won't we, Sean? Because I looked through all the episode lists and did a little search, because it's not we're struggling for stuff to talk about. We never will, me and you.
Yeah, can't stop talking.
We hadn't done one about depression, or not directly about it, so here we are finally. Before that, how are you doing? You had a good week?
I'm doing well. I'm doing good. I was just, I was talking to Connie in New York.
Oh, cool. Yeah,
this week online, and she was saying, can you stick more kind of self-help tips in?
Okay.
She was saying.
Got one for us right now.
Yeah, keep listening to this podcast.
Buy our book.
That's a good self-help tip.
Yeah, cool. Now follow Connie on Instagram, seeing her pics every now
she's
and again.
She's amazing. She's incredible.
There's some cool stuff. Yeah, Connie Rose Art, I think, on Instagram.
Yeah, good.
Find a web. We'll put her website on in the show notes again.
Yeah, very clever.
Yeah, I wasn't feeling too clever this week. I had a bit of an incident on the weekend. I'm landing myself in trouble with the boss, trouble and strife and all that.
Yeah. So what did you do?
Well, we pulled away from a car park in Bromborough, the retail estate nearby.
Yeah.
And it wasn't till the next day that we realised that I'd left the pram top in the car park and driven away. Mamas and papas. Yeah, so if anyone in the Bromborough or Wirral area has found a, or has been offered for sale, a Mamas and Papas black solar pram top.
I've sold it on eBay.
We all watching eBay. Yeah. Flipping heck. Yeah, that was a low point of my weekend. Went back the next day, asked around all the shops, even spoke to the site manager, apparently they do a sweep of the car park every night. Disappeared. So it was either someone's had off with it, or someone's maybe driven over it, and it's just been binned. Either way, I'm in trouble.
I did that once when I was in a band. I got out, when we were loading the van, I got in to drive the van away, reverse it, and there was this crunch, and I'd left my guitar.
Oh, your guitar.
And I drove over the guitar.
Only your good ones.
It was expensive matchwood. It was.
Oh, okay. Well, I wouldn't say about that much, but yeah. It's slight inconvenience. Bin lorries are here right on queue every Wednesday morning.
Hi, guys.
We should get them in one day. So, yeah. Apart from that, though, I've had a good week. Some decent weather, barbecues and stuff. We are talking about depression this week, and there will be a blog post on the website by the time you listen to this, liveinthepresent.co.uk. As well as all the show notes and links we're about to mention. I've got a few here ready to paste and post up and all that stuff.
Yep.
So shall we start, Sean?
Yeah.
I typed in depression into Google, as I do. Not that I don't type depression in every...
Yes.
But I do with our weekly topic. And the first hit, it was actually one of the sponsored ones, was for Rethink, the charity we recorded a few episodes at way back, probably episode 20, 30, something like that. And they had a good definition of depression, which I would like to read to you, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, yeah.
So depression is a long-lasting low mood that affects your ability to do everyday things, feel pleasure, or take interest in activities. Depression is a mental illness recognised worldwide. It's common. It affects about 1 in 10. Something that anyone can get. Mm-hmm. And it's not... Depression is not something that you can just snap out of. It's not a sign of weakness. It's not something that everyone experiences. And it's not, importantly, something that lasts forever.
Yeah.
Would you go along with all that?
Yeah. I think that... there's lots and lots of things in that. That last bit about it doesn't last forever. We talk about, in the Live in the Present stuff, about how if you sit on the riverbank and watch the river of life flow by, it's actually always moving, even if it's moving slowly.
Yeah.
And whatever you're looking at will come to pass. Whatever you're experiencing will come to pass.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that Stephen Fry talks about in his approach to manic depression, that once you realise it, if you can hold in long enough, that depression passes, or the manic phase passes, it moves on. And that's true with anything, with pain, disasters of any sort.
When you're meeting with, say, new clients, and they've maybe suggested that they're suffering from depression but they're not sure, how long does it take for you to realise that someone is or is not suffering? How easy is it to whack that label on someone?
It's usually instant, because you can tell before they do. I'm just looking up something. Let me just do this for you.
I don't edit the show, so...
There's something called Sanpaku eyes. This is the thing that I wanted to show you.
Sanpaku
eyes. See those eyes? No, that is...
Sanpaku eyes, okay. Yeah.
Can you see the
eyes? I'm looking at a picture of... JFK here.
Yeah.
Looking, it's like a quite informal. We'll put this link up. Sanpaku, S-A-N-P-A-K-U.
Can you see the eyes? The way the eyes are, they're heavy lidded.
Yeah.
And can you see the white underneath the iris?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, when someone's depressed, that's what happens to their eyes.
Really?
Yeah, and you can tell straight away. There's two things that you're looking at. One is the tension around the eyes, the heavy lidding, and then obviously you can see the whites there.
Is that because his head's bowed down a bit as well? It doesn't look like it is.
That's quite strange. The eyes are quite weird, in that the eyes are very... You know, we talk about the eyes being the window of the soul.
Mm.
The eyes very often are telling you what's going on inside a person. If someone is staring at you and won't let go, or if someone can't hold your eye gaze and they're turning away.
Right.
All those kinds of things that are going on. But if you ever see eyes like that, and there'll be lots of examples here... See that?
Yeah. So is that sanpaku? Is that just a term that describes that look in the eyes, or is that something where it's like a warning sign for someone's not?
It's a diagnostic term in Chinese, Japanese type philosophies.
Wow.
With people like acupressure, you know, that they would be a diagnostic.
That's interesting.
Term.
Very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, but you can see that's a good example there. Dear audience, you'd love this if you could see it. We'll put them up on the sites.
Just Sanpaku eyes, Google that and you'll see some stuff. Basically, you can see the bottom of the whites of someone's eyes below their pupil, iris.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a bit of a warning sign.
Yeah, you can see the iris is starting to rise. And you can see with the JFK picture particularly, how the lidding becomes heavy.
Yeah,
people's lids. It's almost like they're swollen almost.
So was JFK someone that suffered from depression then?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure on exactly his relationship to depression, but that is a really depressed face.
There's warning signs there for you.
Yeah. So from my point of view, when someone comes in the room, I can tell whether they're depressed.
He looks kind of. He's a famous. Very famous face, but if I weren't to know that guy, you'd kind of think you'd want to go over to him and ask him what was up. You know, you look tired, pal. What's up?
Yeah. So I don't know what was happening for him at that point, but he was dipping into depression.
Mm.
In fact, he looks quite deep down, really.
All right.
Wow. But it's I suppose that the things I'm looking for with people that are depressed is that the eyes will be sampaku, but also the chest will be withdrawn.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be round shouldered, and they will be pulled in. You know, you can see it a little bit in that picture in
yeah.
the shoulders.
Yeah, you just look a bit kind of hunched
yeah.
in.
Yeah, and people will pull the sternum backwards.
Mm-hmm.
That is the green chakra, the anahata they would talk about in the East. So if someone is feeling confident and proud, their chest comes out.
Yeah.
If they're feeling depressed, it pulls in.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so these are little warning signs you're looking for, even before yeah. you've spoke to someone, aren't you?
In the psycho professions, we have IAPT forms, where people fill in out an IAPT form, which looks at anxiety, it looks at depression, it looks at social anxiety issues, phobias, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's a standard. And one of the things is if people tick the boxes and then they get a score, that score can then be passed on to GPs or whatever. So we're trying to indicate levels of problem.
It says here, or rethink, say that it's something that can potentially affect everyone. So what point does kind of feeling a bit down in the dumps, which everyone, I'm sure, yeah. has experienced, can become depression? Like,
I think that because my world is that we're not mad or sane, we're all mad. It's just we're on different spectrums. If you look at the depressive spectrum, everybody has down days, and those down days could be hormonal, could be to do with food, could be you had too much to drink last night.
The weather?
It could be the weather. Yeah, it could be anything that's going on that's going to make you feel a bit flat. And there's days where you think, I just can't be bothered today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that is like a tiny, tiny taste of what the depth of depression is. You know, because that feeling of like, I can't be bothered. When somebody's deep in depression, they can't even get out of bed.
Right.
It gets that low. And, mm-hmm. and it works right down to a cellular level, right down to the muscles, that people's bodies feel like lead. To move your leg, it takes such an effort.
Yeah.
You know, to get from the bed to the loo is just such a task. And other people are thinking, put yourself together, don't be stupid, come on, get on with it.
Yep.
Yeah, and one of the ideas that if you exercise, you can lift depressive states, which is true, but you have to get enough energy going to get out of bed long enough to do the exercise to lift the depression. It's one of those. It's chicken and egg.
Bit of a catch-22, isn't it?
But one of the problems, it's a bit like people will say to me, I'm really stressed, and I think, I'm looking at it, and I think, no, you're not stressed, you're busy. Yeah, and some people say, I'm really depressed. And no, you're not depressed, you're kind of a bit down. Yeah, it's different. It's a different yeah. order, a different kind of magnitude of stuff.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then if you start to look at the why would someone be depressed, what's that about? If you look at our live in the present model, we identify normal depression, and I'll explain what I mean by normal in a moment, as if someone is ruminating on past too much and keeps reliving unresolved emotional past in the present, they develop depression.
Right.
Just as if the other way, someone keeps ruminating on unlived futures, negative futures, and lives those in the present, they create anxiety. And then what tends to happen is people do both. They become anxious depressives, which
yep.
is what most of us do, especially when the pressure's on. Yeah, but when we start using words like I have depression or a depression disorder or an anxiety disorder, it's you have to think of most stuff. It's through an enormous magnifying glass. It's huge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you look at, I'm saying normal depression, because I think everybody has that going on. If you look at clinical depression is like diabetes. If your chemistry is out, you need to take chemistry to balance your system, or else it doesn't work.
Okay.
Yeah? So if the chemistry is out at the top end in the brain, whatever's going on, you might need antidepressants to lift your mood up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're clinically depressed, that means you will need to take that chemistry as medication, maybe for your entire life, or maybe for a long period of time, until
yeah.
your system rebalances itself.
Which brings yeah. me nicely to a couple of articles yeah. I found yesterday, before I even knew we were talking about this, which is quite interesting.
One of
the BBC and Telegraph, I'm sure it was part of the same press release, but there's been some actual scientific studies now done to show that mindfulness-based therapy can be as effective in certain cases, disclaimer, as medication. So I think they ran a test on...
But you see, clinical depression If someone is clinically depressed or clinically anxious or clinically diabetic, it doesn't matter how much mindfulness you do, you're not going to solve the problem. You might alleviate symptoms, but you can't create something that your body's depleted of creating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's just temporary, lift you out of there.
What happens when you're using mindfulness, what you're doing is you're teaching the individual how to be, really, you're teaching them how to become emotionally articulate, because things like depression aren't really cognitive, they're emotional. We're not good at using our emotions. So that in mindfulness, we're using other techniques. It goes beyond talking therapy. So now you're talking about visualization, meditation, relaxation, using other bits of your system.
Yeah.
And it's realizing that emotions, when we have an emotional memory, it comes with a set of images.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a set of thoughts, it's a set of coloured images that come with it. And if you can use those visualized part of your brain, then you can change the way that you feel.
Yep.
Which is what happens in sports psychology. I mean, it works in lots of different areas. It's certainly true, and I've done this with clients, that if you have someone who's got bipolar or something like that, and you use mindfulness, you can halve medication.
Right.
You can't eradicate the medication. That's what I mean about if it's got this clinical component, you can affect it, but you can't necessarily change it.
Okay.
Yeah. When something is reactive, I suppose this is a classic for me, is that we've tended in our society over the last 100 years, I guess, to have medicalized normal situations. Mm-hmm. So that someone who's pregnant these days isn't treated like a woman who's pregnant and that's normal. It becomes a medical issue with a big medical establishment and hospitals and all kinds of stuff. And you're told enough scary stories to think, oh, we need that. And yet for thousands and thousands of years, children were born in normal situations with the midwives and, you know, the wise women or whatever.
Yep.
And I'm sure babies died. I'm not saying that. But it's a case of we've turned something which is essentially a normal process into something that could be seen as a medical condition.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's the same with things like bereavement or loss. When someone is in bereavement, they're not ill, they're in bereavement. And yet we will treat them like they're ill, and we will treat them for depression as though they have this condition, as opposed to going through a natural process of bereavement and loss, which is a process.
Yeah,
which usually takes a couple of years.
Yeah, and you can see it's not just humans, though. There's many species of animal which will go through it as well, which is a bit of an indicator that it's a pretty natural thing, isn't it?
Yeah. And what one of the things that people hate, and I never use phrases like this because people poke you in the eye if you do, but it's the issue about time's a good healer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's true, time is a good healer, because in time what happens is that we process stuff, and it's the thing about sitting on the bank and watching the river go by. In time, the things that are in front of you in the river do float off. They float off into the past. And what's in front of you now is the present, and the future is flowing down the river. The other way.
Yep.
Yeah. But it is a case of whether people are suffering from depression or anxiety or whatever. Mindfulness says that if you can learn to focus in the present, not in the past or the future, you will be in the state where there is the least stress on anything, and you will come out of your situation quickest.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm.
So have you ever been depressed?
No, I can't say I can, really, not knowing what I know about it now. Yeah, I've been a bit down in the dumps and stuff at certain times of my life. Particularly, actually, thinking about it, my first year at uni, I was in a halls of residence first year at uni. Getting to know... I'm a sociable chap, as you're well aware.
I am.
Mm-hmm. And you are. It's all about me, yeah? But yeah, I was in this kind of cell block almost in uni, and it was like you'd come... And yeah, it was really the first few months. Actually, I don't think I was depressed, but I was really lonely, actually, and that's on my list of things to talk about. That first few months of uni, because you'd kind of shut yourself away in this little room, get up and go and have your breakfast in the canteen or whatever the next day, and your dinner at 5. And there was no real social space actually. And I heard about people going to uni and how brilliant it was, and they were congregating at dinner time, lunchtime, and for me it wasn't like that. And it was like, whoa. So I didn't enjoy it at all. I got into it in year 2 and year 3 when I lived in a house with a bunch of idiots. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was probably my point. What about you?
I've had depressive phases. It's interesting, without doing a rehash of my dear old dad.
Yeah, we haven't talked about it in a while.
because he was a problem, it was easier if he was around to get out of it. So I would be upstairs in my bedroom, door shut, in a confined space. And to be alone in a confined space, for me, is a place of safety. So being on my... You talked about being in a cell.
Yeah.
It's like being in a cell with the door shut, for me, safe. That's mm-hmm. a good place to be, because I know life's okay there.
Okay.
And yet, for other people, that would drive them bonkers. And I think that reactive nature of depressive feelings is kind of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of that will be imprinted and embedded in the early years of life, you know, family life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which will affect us later.
There's some really cool stuff online, but one of the things I would highlight, it's not my resource of the week, there's a two-part documentary on YouTube, Stephen Fry's Secret Life of a Manic Depressive.
Yeah, see, which is brilliant.
Which there's a load of smaller videos with him talking about it, but he's been at the forefront of really helping talk about this issue, hasn't he, in recent years?
Yeah, it's good when celebrity figures who have deep issues come forward and are prepared to talk about it, because it normalises.
Yep.
And on the basis that everybody, I would suspect, at some point feels a level of depression,
mm-hmm.
whether it would be deep enough to label it depression, and to be clinically...
Yeah, well, there's a list on Wikipedia of high-profile people that have suffered major mental illness, and most of them you wouldn't even know, although it was at periods in their lives when you think they should be the happiest, like Woody Allen, Buzz Aldrin, that kind of thing.
But we have the issue with Robin Williams.
Robin Williams, yeah, recently. Yeah. Al Pacino, I think he's spoken about it recently as well. So, yeah, even if you've got it all, you're still susceptible to this, which is quite terrifying.
The comedian when I was younger was Tony Hancock.
Oh, yeah.
Who ended up killing himself, and everybody was deeply shocked at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see that. But how many... You know, like... we get couples that split up and everyone says, I thought they were the perfect couple, you know, because we don't know what goes on behind the face, behind the door.
Yeah.
You know, how many people go into work, how many people listening to this will go into work and they go and they go, hiya, and they've got the happy face on, but behind the mask they're not feeling like that at all.
Yeah, well, it's quite a British thing to do as well, when someone asks how are you, just to say great, fine, no matter what your actual feeling inside.
Yeah,
we're kind of trained to do that.
But when people say how are you, they don't mean how are you, they mean hello. You tell them how you are, they run away.
Yeah, whoa, back off. I mean, well, if we've got friends and family that we may be concerned about, which I can't think any off the top of my head, but what's the first step? I mean, telling people to pull themselves together isn't a good idea.
Yeah, that's we've talked about Emile Coué's law of reversed effort before, and when you confront people's problems aggressively, you usually make them worse.
Oh yeah,
yeah. You have to come at it from a different angle, and asking someone how they are. I mean, one of the classics in psycho speak. I go to the waiting room, someone comes in, and I say, "How you doing? How are you?" And they say, "I'm fine." And in psycho speak, F-I-N-E is effing insincere with no emotion, because everybody says fine. So I say, how are you really? And then they go, and then it comes up.
Okay.
Yeah, but fine is the veneer on the front.
Yeah.
Yeah, but very few people are fine.
Mm.
You know, it's certainly true that thoughts become things. If you focus on positivity, you will feel better.
Yep.
So it's much better to focus on, no, I feel good. You know, the sunshine is day, it's great, I'm warm. I'm safe, it's good, to actually focus into that, rather than focus into the negativity of, oh my God, we've got the election in 2 weeks, who's going to win the election? Oh, no! Yeah, because we can play all those games as well.
Yeah, sure. I bet there's plenty of politicians out there that are struggling behind that veneer as well, trying to keep up appearances and...
Yeah, amazingly tough. I mean, it's like that for anybody who's in the public, someone who's got to go out on stage and do a performance,
yeah,
whether it's a musical performance or political performance or whatever, and they're feeling really grotty. You know, you've got to stand outside, take a deep breath, and you've got to go and do it.
Yep.
You have to be an actor and mm-hmm. actually make it happen. Yeah.
I
suppose one of the other bits of depression that we need to acknowledge as well. And this isn't accepted by all areas of psychological medicine. For me, it's a reality. I know for lots of other people it is too. Is that if someone has repressed anger, say day in, day out, your boss or your spouse does things that make you angry. But
like,
you can't,
like, lose bram tops and I'll leave them in the
cardboard. Yeah, stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Keep talking.
But you can't express it. You know, you have to be nice. That's all right, darling. Yeah, or it's your boss and you want to punch your boss. Yes,
I had a boss like that once. Yeah, yeah, okay. Keep talking. Come on.
But if you keep repressing the anger and you don't express it, then in the end, that energy, that negative energy, has to go somewhere. And sometimes depression can be simply that. That what you need to do is to run, jump, scream, shout, and get it out of your system. You know, maybe you need to go and punch things, or, you know, people say I can't scream, and because if I scream, people come running. And I say, no, get in your car, go down the motorway, turn the stereo up, and scream your head off. No one knows what you're doing. They think you're enjoying the music. Hey, you know, but just get it out of your system. Let it go.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You were going to say you've got a boss. You had a boss.
No, no. I was just saying I had a boss like that, and I can't remember what I did in the end. Well,
you didn't punch him.
I quit. Handed my notice in. No, I didn't punch him. No, I thought better of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Depression in its extreme is totally and utterly debilitating. I mean, we have in Britain, at different times, it spikes that we'll have, it's usually males, a huge amount of male adolescent suicides, a lot of middle-aged male suicides. And very often what happens is when you're working with someone who's in the depth of depression, and by the depth of depression, I mean the blackest, nastiest, worst place you could be, where they're demotivated, life has no meaning, and it's really, really horrible. Actually, the person's quite safe at that point, psychologically and physically. It's as they start to get better. As they start to get better, they come to this point where they've actually got the energy to kill themselves.
Right.
And it's when someone is getting better from depression that they're at most danger of suicide. Once they get past the suicide point and life has hope and light and there's something to go for, then usually they're okay. But it's getting them past the suicide point. And many, many people who've killed themselves in depressive suicide, it's been not because they're in the depths of suicide, it's because they're actually started to get better.
So, I mean, you must have clients like that, or at that phase, like right now, are you advising them to tell their family to be wary of that, or are you speaking to the family?
Sometimes you would need, especially working with a GP or whatever, so some people, they need like suicide watch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, certainly in psychiatry, it's people on suicide watch, and they're being checked every, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever. And it can be like that. As they come through that phase to get them through on the other side. But if you have people that you know are depressed and in the depths of depression like that, and things are starting to move, then you do need to keep an eye on them.
Right.
You know, that's when they're the most vulnerable.
Mm.
Yeah, which is odd, because you think it'd be the other way around, but it's not.
Yep.
If someone is really, really depressed and they have that body heaviness, mind heaviness, emotion heaviness, they don't have the energy to do anything.
Wow. I mean, thankfully, it is an issue which is getting more and more attention now, isn't it? And it's being seen. Well, it is an actual clinical issue, isn't it? So
and it's good that people are talking about it and we're more open about
it. Yeah, the guys at Rethink, and there's plenty of other charities and mental health organisations that are doing some good work, aren't they?
But one of the things I'd say to people that are listening to this is that if you are depressed and genuinely depressed, you need to go to your GP, you need to do something about it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you need to actually be active about it. But you also need to look at the idea of, am I depressed or am I a bit down? What's actually going on? Because sometimes, like I say, people will say to me, they're stressed, and I think, no, you're not, you're busy.
Okay.
Yeah, you're not stressed, you're busy. And it's the same thing, you know, you're not depressed, okay, you're down. You haven't got your own way.
People aren't sure, they should still get some help.
Yeah, go to your GP.
So it can be looked at.
And let your GP say, oh, don't be stupid, pull yourself together.
Yeah.
Go and drink more water, you'll be all right.
All right, have you got a resource of the week, Sean?
Yeah, what I've done is I've put a link up to a site that reviews the best depression iPhone and Android apps of the year. Any of those things are good. I can't recommend any of them individually, but if you have a look through them and see what they are, they're all about you working with yourself so you don't dip into deep states of depression.
Okay.
And if you feel that you're vulnerable in that way, they're good places to go.
Cool.
And having something on your phone that gives you a regular nudge, mm-hmm. you know, how you're doing. Because it's like if you sign up for Headspace,
yeah.
What happens is a few times a day, they automatically send you an email, pops up on your screen that says, how are you feeling? You know, be mindful for the next couple of minutes, focus in.
Cool.
Yeah, and that's good. It keeps you on your toes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you unsubscribe?
No. I guess you can.
Yeah. No, cool. All right. Well, we'll put the link up for that. Do you need to get that?
No, don't know what it is. Stop.
Yeah, my resource, again, for the first time in a while, is Relevant. I was on the Rethink website, I haven't looked through that again. And there is a page which has region by region segments of where you can go and get help if you think you are or you are suffering from depression. So there are 19 services and groups in the Northwest, well, voluntary organisations related to Rethink alone that people could get at. And all around the country there's loads. I think it's 200 services in England alone.
And Rethink is a good organisation.
Yeah, have a good look through the website.
It's amazing, yeah.
Mm, yeah, we were down there many moons ago, hey?
Yeah, I did stuff with them in Birmingham as well.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Cool. But also I'll put the link up to that in the website as well, and I think we're all done for today, aren't we, Sean?
Yeah, I think we are.
So head to livingthepresent.co.uk for all the links that we've talked about today. Lots of other cool stuff on there too. Next week, it's a biggie.
Ta 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 ta.
Episode 100 is coming up, and we're not too sure what we're doing yet, but it's going to be good.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. I'm going to bring the champagne.
What is going on with all our phones? yeah, champagne for sure. What else can we celebrate with? Canapés, maybe?
Yeah.
We could record it somewhere special as well.
We could have a party. I think we need to do an episode from the Coffee Co.
Down our favourite coffee shop in Bennington.
It's good.
We should do that on a nice bustling day. Invite some of the old dears across for a chat.
Yeah, yeah. we could ask some of those older people on there what are their secrets for the perfect life.
We could. That'd be a good episode, actually. Yeah. Just invite them over. But yeah, for episode 100, we have got something special planned, haven't we? A little programme of...
yeah, we're going to do some good stuff.
A little something. So it's going to be good, guys. I promise you. Thanks for hanging in there this long. Eh?
And for Connie, if we're looking at what are the self-help tips, the self-help tips have to be, from the live in the present point of view, about mindfulness. If you don't do your mindful practice every day, which means like a meditative space, a focusing space that might be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or if you're really sexy, it could be an hour. Yeah. but if you don't do that every day, you start to fall in the water and get washed away in the water rather than sitting on the bank and letting the water
splashing around. Away. Yeah, okay.
So for everybody here, my self-help tip is do your headspace, mind space, meditation, whatever you want to call it, take that time out every day to look after your own emotional well-being. And if you don't, then you're likely to get problems.
Cool. I had an email from a listener who I shall not name, but she was saying how she's loving the show and all that stuff and how her husband thinks she's really weird because she's doing the Who Loves Your Baby in the mirror every morning.
I love it.
So yeah, it's pretty cool, little things like that. All done.
Yeah, I'm cool.
Sean, see you next week for a biggie.
Yeah, every week's a biggie.
Yeah, and you take care.
See you. Bye.
See you, everyone. Bye.